It's in the poetry at the Word Cafe.
It's in the poetry. It's in the poetry.
Words plucked like fruit, then thrown away. Some may stay in lines spun like silk that tear and fray. Some may stay as stands a slow branch and grow to
at the Word Cafe.
Hello and welcome to the Word Cafe on 102.5 FM Sound Art Radio. Thank you for joining us today. We have an action-packed programme with poets Helen Ivory, Susan Taylor, and our co-presenter of the Lockdown Podcasts, Matt Harvey. But before we get on with the programme, we have to connect with, two people in Totnes, actually, Tracy and Sarah. But just to kind of give you an inkling of this 1 hour and a half poetry programme, we have Rosie Jackson on book launch today, and she'll be reading from Light Makes It Easy. And then top of the hour, the man with the biscuits, you know who it is. It's Robert Garnham, Professor of Whimsy. And then as the clock rolls, we have got Kerry Baker, dialer poet. So have you got your digestive biscuits? Have you? Have you got your cup of coffee? Have you? If you haven't, quickly go and get it. Take a seat, put your feet up. Or if you're in bed, get your hairnet on. We're in for a big time here. It is the final seven of the seven lockdown pods. So it's really exciting. It's a kind of party, you know. It's a party. So let's get the girls. The girls from Totnes have got to come on the blower to do a bit of a sort of... Ooh, the phone's gone awfully dead. Oh, where are you? Oh, I don't know. It's all going hairy. There she is. Thank God for Sarah sending me a photograph earlier on. Ooh. It's that moment. The moment of reckoning.
Hello.
Hello. Is that you, Tracy?
Are you receiving me? It is me, Tracy.
Hello, Tracy. Welcome to the Word Cafe. Have we got Sarah yet? No. That's okay.
Oh, I don't know.
Hopefully,
you've got me. Will that do for now?
Yeah, of course it will. So hopefully we'll get Sarah Linky onto this. If not, I don't know what we'll do. We'll have to scream. So I was just saying that it was because of you and Sarah that the lockdown pods came into being. So big up to you both.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure being able to facilitate them and help be the midwife to give birth to them.
You certainly did. You pushed them onto Spotify. So for those out there listening, you can actually link to them, all of them, all seven, with 14 top poets across the UK. So please do that. Now, meantime, I have set you a little bit of a task. Is it true?
You did, yes. Well, you asked me to either read out something that inspired me, kept me going through the lockdowns, or maybe some poetry, or maybe I'd like to write something myself. And I thought, do you know what? I'll have a go at writing something myself. God, it was a lot harder than I thought. A lot harder than I thought. And I'm going to make apologies of what I'm about to release to your listeners. I mean, I was listening to one of your podcasts that Simon Williams was on, and he was talking about how he has quite a high attrition rate, you know, Well, unfortunately for you, I don't write poems, so I don't have an attrition rate. So you're probably going to get something that would probably end up in the basket.
Not at all. I'm just so thrilled that you've taken the task on. That, you see, that is literally what you are like. Give you something and you rock with
it. It's got no form or function. It's like it's all over the place. I think there's probably
well, that sounds like
styles.
My that sounds like my poetry.
It sounds like you, actually.
It does sound like me. Okay, well, come on, we're ready for it. You've set it up. You've set us up now.
Okay, right, here we go then. What got me through the lockdowns? Do you mean what got me through the lockdowns? What pissed me off? What drove me bloody mad to distraction? Well, after many months inside with Patrick, just about his every little action or inaction. Grateful I was, large abode, open space. But what time needed to pass looking at your face before I retreated at a lightning pace? Radio 4 podcasts, my saving grace. Don't get me wrong, the first few months were bliss. Nude sunbathing, cool beer, a smoke, a kiss. But very soon the novelty wore off. Fear set in at the mere hint of a cough. Nightmares filled with hospitalisation, lack of inspiration for creation, unlike what seemed the rest of the bloody nation. Wonderful dreams of self-sufficiency, then realising my own deficiency. Snap out of it now. Stop the self-pity. So you had to swallow a daily dose of Chris Whitty, but for so many more, life got real shitty, real gritty. So maybe I need to change the emphasis here. Did you mean what got me through the lockdowns? What made me smile? What filled me with joy and kept me going? After scoring a lockdown hat trick, it was music, dancing, a Matt Harvey poem, red wine a-flowing, and Patrick. Grateful I am for that time in this place. It was time for reflection, life at a slower pace. But now that's all past, but it's left its trace. Let's slow down, respect, hold hands, and embrace.
Woo! That is Tracy Gillis' first poem. Yowza! And you did it here on Sound Art Radio on the Word Cafe. Thank you, Tracy. I like the
You're
word.
Most welcome.
I like the way you injected Trace into that. Trace. I thought that was, yeah, that was clever. That was clever. Seriously, well done. And thank you so much for actually taking the time. I think you've got a journey ahead of you.
Thank you for taking on the challenge and producing these wonderful podcasts with the help of Matt Harvey and all your lovely poets you selected. And of course, let's not forget that wonderful, wonderful Word Cafe film. That
exactly.
is just glorious. If anyone wants to take a 20-minute coffee break, go and watch it on the YouTube channel at Bauhaus. It's just glorious.
It is really, really a fantastic... Even George, George Surtees, last week said that after watching it, he said it was a really well-made, fantastic film. So that was very... fortunate
and
to.
It's always going to be there. It's there for posterity. It's exactly.
And now, what's happened to Sarah? I tell you what,
I don't know.
I'm going to play a bit of music, and then I'm going to disconnect this call. But then I'm going to ring again in the hope that she will answer as well as you. Okay.
Okie dokie. Right. I shall speak to you shortly. Bye.
Let's hope that we get Sarah. Well done to Tracy, though. That was brilliant. So we'll have a little bit of music. That's if everything's still on my screen. It is amazing. Yeah, let's have a bit of music. Thank you. Okay, we've got them. So thank you, Hans Zimmer. I'm going to just curtail that music. Thank you so much. That was called This Is Going to Hurt. So I had to play This Is Going to Hurt because you weren't on. Hello, and welcome. No, don't worry. It's not your fault. It's technology. Welcome to the programme. You missed Tracy's poem, but don't worry because I'm going to pod this and you'll be able to
pod it
and you'll be able to listen. So tell us what you've got up your sleeve as your little test today. Your thing.
Well, you asked your challenge. For something that gave us comfort in the lockdown, and I actually found it really hard to read or concentrate on anything. But what I did do was read loads of cookbooks because I've got hundreds of them.
Yeah.
And I've picked a recipe from one of my favourite cookbooks of the moment.
Fantastic. Go for it.
So this is a recipe by Diana Henry from the book called Eat Like a Peach. Mm. And it's a beautiful book. The cover is actually all peachy and fuzzy. It's beautiful.
I've seen it.
The recipe comes from her winter section. And the recipe is for smoked haddock and celeriac gratin. It's smoky, rich, simple, and there's barely any washing up to do. This recipe serves 8 people, but I have to say, I don't think she's actually put enough ingredients in, so I am going to double some of them. You need 3 large leeks, 35 grams of unsalted butter, 725 grams of celeriac and 200 grams of potatoes, 100 ml of fish stock, 300 ml of double cream, and she says 375 grams of undyed smoked haddock, but I think you need to double that, or each person's only going to get 50 grams each of fish, and that's just not enough. We also need salt and pepper. So to start, you need to preheat your oven to 200 degrees Celsius. Then you need to trim the tops and root ends from your leeks and remove any discoloured outer layers. Slice, wash, and then put in a frying pan with some butter. You need a pan with a lid. You then just cook this low and slow. Diana recommends 20 minutes, but I usually double that so that the leeks are really soft and creamy. And if you think it's going to dry out, just add a splash of water, or if it's handy, a little splash of wine. Meanwhile, and this is the hardest part of the recipe, you need to peel your celeriac. They're really, really annoying vegetables. You have to keep peeling until you don't have any knobbly bits left. After that, you need to slice it very finely. Diana recommends a mandolin, but I think they're really dangerous to use. So I cut my celeriac in half and put the biggest flat bit on the table and then just slice from there with a serrated knife so that it doesn't slip around all over the place. You need to get your slices as thin as you can, but it doesn't really matter in the end because you just cook it a bit longer if the slices are a bit too thick. You do the same with your potatoes. Then you put your vegetables, all of your vegetable slices, in the biggest saucepan you own, one with a heavy base, and add your stock and all of the cream, bring it to the boil, and then turn down and simmer for about 15 minutes. Depending on the thickness of your slices, you might want to go up to 25 minutes. You need to be able to pierce the vegetables with a fork quite easily without having them fall to pieces. Cut your fish into 4 centimetre slices and then you're ready to go. You need a lovely big dish, 30 centimetres, and you put half the celeriac mixture with the cream into your dish. Season with salt and pepper, but not too much salt because your fish is quite salty. So you've got in your celeriac, then add your leeks and then the smoked haddock. Then put the rest of the celeriac and potatoes on the top. So it's more like a sandwich. You've got celeriac, leeks, fish, celeriac and leeks again. Then you're all ready to go. You pop it in the oven for half an hour and then serve it with some lovely green vegetables or some watercress or some frilly water, anything that takes your fancy. And finally, serve it with a lovely bottle of cold Chablis.
When are we coming to your house?
It's delicious.
Here, look, you've got some drums coming. Here we go. That's what you get for that one. Thank you so much. So are we all coming to your house then?
Dinner, Sarah? That yeah. sounds delicious. I'm pretty sure you've had it, Tracy.
I think I have, actually.
Yeah, I think I cooked it for everybody, like, last year.
I like your erroneous suggestion that you do 4 meters of fish. You did correct yourself very quickly.
I did. I know I did it four meters. I know I said double the recipe, but...
I know that's going a bit far.
Girls, I just want to say thank you. Literally, you came to the party today and you brought your special performances. I want to say thank you, but thank you most importantly for everything over lockdown, for all your support and kindness. And as I said earlier to the listeners of Sound Art, we wouldn't be here doing lockdown pods if it wasn't for you both. So thank you very much.
Thank you. It's our pleasure.
I hope you'll keep listening, and loads of love to you.
We absolutely will.
Thanks a lot.
To you too.
Bye.
Love you, Judy.
Bye.
See you soon.
See you soon. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
That's the girls. We had to get the girls on because they were such a huge part of all of this project. Now, I have to do this. You realise that it's not easy. I'm on technical. I'm just here in this room. Hopefully, I'm going to press the right... Yes, I think this is it. This is the pod. We're off. So, hello, and welcome to the Barrel House Podcasts, supported by a little bit of dosh from the Arts Council purse, a series of 7 jolly podcasts made with love, tenderness, and Matt Harvey. They are especially going out to our audiences who've been missing the Word Cafe, which used to happen once a month upstairs at the Barrel House, Totnes. Over to you, Mr. Matt Harvey.
Thank you, Julie. It's lovely to be here again. Lovely to be twinned with love and tenderness again. I really appreciate that. So we've got Helen Ivory and Susan Taylor with us, and I'm going to do a little warm-up poem, hoping that along the way we will be hearing wolf-related poetry. I'm going to do a short domestic dog poem. It was inspired by a lovely picture from the artist Claudia Schmidt of a bunch of sort of regular household pet dogs gathering on the edge of the park at the full moon. I call it Howl. With a pack a cappella, we meet after dark when the moon's full and yellow on the edge of the park. We're grunters and growlers of all shapes and all sizes. We're wailers and howlers, not here to win prizes. When the moon becomes full, there's a tug, there's a pull, and we give it our all as we honour the call that our ancestors answered to. When the moon's at its zenith, we howl our 2 penneth, our deep doggy wishes. And though some have issues with personal fitness, the moon is our witness that for all the rich dinners, we've still got it in us. We may have been tamed, inappropriately named, but for now we forget that we're somebody's pet. We are wolves. So there you go, the wishes in...
You're setting us off.
This warm-up is working perfectly.
Yes, Helen Ivory, a.k.a. the new haircut. How's your new haircut?
It's better, thank you. It's much more under control. I can see out from underneath my fringe, which is always good when you want.
Fabulous. She's really known for her flamboyant clothes, dress sense. She's very poetic. Helen is a poet and visual artist. Her 5th Blood Axe collection is called The Anatomical Venus, which centres on women and otherness. Rachel Smart writes, this collection is a stunningly curated linguistic exhibition on the historical abuse of women, enticing and yet flinching. This disquieting house of dolls makes abuse seen and urges us to reevaluate why women are where they are now. And it does so with an eerie and unforgettable beauty. In 1999, Helen won an Eric Gregory Award from the Society of Authors. In 2019, she was named as one of the EDP's 100 most inspiring women. Helen Ivory!
Thank you. Well, there was a call out for wolves, and if you call wolves, they will come. This poem is in the voice of somebody who believes himself to be a wolf, or a wolf who believes himself to be a human. It's called Persona. I have not always been able to speak so freely. There have been, shall we say, certain limitations on my actions. You see, for years I was a wolf shuffling dejectedly around the fringes of the human world. People saw no reason for my nighttime perambulations or moonlit laments. My snufflings around graveyards confounded them. But deep down, I knew my body was hidden somewhere. It all got rather messy, and to cut a long story short, restrictions were put upon me, banning me from my regular haunts. Documents were passed above my head that I was deemed unfit to sign. The hunt for my body, my true body, my furless, fangless human form, could not end there in that place of high windows and regulated mealtimes. And so I planned my escape. I trained myself to walk on two legs, and with a little more effort began to form words in my lupine throat. The people around me responded favourably, striking up conversations about my life before wolfdom and such. Papers were signed and I was released. And now my search has begun in earnest. I find a simple good evening or the calling to heal of imaginary dogs throws people off the scent in graveyards late at night. So that was my first.
Oh!
Yes!
So, yeah, right. So the voice of this poem is some kind of insurance sales pig, and it's a villanelle, and it's advice from the third little pig. Not wise to build your house on sticks or straw, and so you need to heed my good advice, unless you want the wolf outside your door. It's true that bricks and blocks will cost you more, but bacon must be saved at any price. Not wise to build your house of sticks or straw. Concrete just must be used. You can't ignore the peace of mind it gives, so safe and nice. Or do you want the wolf outside your door? Beware that snarling, gnashing carnivore, his blazing eyes, his teeth, his heart of ice. Not wise to build your house of sticks or straw. These limp attempts at housing, are you sure they'll not come crashing down in a trice? Can't you see the wolf outside your door? Your life is built upon a fatal flaw. You want to be his latest sacrifice? Not wise to build your house of sticks or straw unless you want the wolf outside your door.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Yes. I have one more shorter poem, and it's more of a slanted wolf, more of a kind of Little Red Riding Hood vibe to it. So look at you, darling puppet, all snug in your box. It's high time you kicked up your heels, now the nights have drawn in. I'll send you out like a bad mother, with the path impossibly narrow and the trees bound to snag your strings. Best to ignore those anonymous howls. Fear not, child, your heart is made of wood, after all, and you are a meal for no beast. And the strings, if you look, are gone, the light from my window grown weak.
You're setting the scene.
That's me.
Excellent.
Thank you, Helen Ivory.
Yeah,
well done.
Yeah. Oh, I should have stayed with me to send you out like a bad mother. I find that your villanelle particularly was incredibly apt, because in an earlier podcast, Helen, we actually had a pitch from the wolf of the same tale.
Oh, really?
So we're hearing from within the tales themselves in a way that's, very welcome.
Oh, that's interesting. I look forward to hearing that.
So you must, now you have to listen to all the podcasts. So, right, it's time for me to introduce Susan. Susan Taylor, poet.
Hello.
I'm going to speak to you as if telling you about yourself, as if you somehow...
Yeah.
...from amnesia and think, who am I? Am I a poet too? Yes, you are. Poet, spoken word artist, rainbow catcher, ex-farmer. Yes, spent many years as a shepherd on the family farm in the Lincolnshire Wolds, now living on Dartmoor, drawing inspiration from the natural world. It says here on my notes, you're fond of sheep, but in the best tricks to fashion. the latest work is a poetry show, Walking in the Path of Wolves. And I want to start this. I want to give some praise of this from Dr. Martin Shaw. He said, Susan Taylor has the crackle, the swing, the wayward word charisma that calls ancient energies into the room.
Wow.
He said that. And I think that's true of not just of this piece, which he was referring to, La Loba, Enchanting the World. I think it's true generally of your work. But I'm hoping that we're going to get some of the wolf work today. I've glossed over, you've got 15 books on your website.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I counted them.
Elsewhere,
you claim to have 8 published poetry collections, but in the shop, there are 15. Now,
I've been at it rather a long while, you see. This is the thing, she says in her old voice.
Welcome, Susan.
I'm very pleased to be here and to hear Helen's poems. Well, I lived in a little cottage in the Dart Valley, and there was a mysterious, very large stone in the wall. And this poem's about that. It's called The Boulder in the Room, and it might have been something else, you will hear. This house has an uncommon boulder, neither in nor out of doors, but spanning both. You could fancy there's a threshold there, not necessarily to the normal outside, a link to the valley where all the boulders ring with half-heard cadences, just as they did when trees formed a full cape for the spirits born of forest, and no man dare to tear the branches down. We are left with just their shimmering garlands around the faces of the waterholes we've ripped out of the sky. Let's not be strict on when the other time was, for it was long ago, and still is if you care to rest your head up on that rock, shut your eyes and slumber against its old grey. You can hear the layers of dreams gone hard begin to soften. An image may strike you like an axe, so you jump a whole life in your sleep, swearing that you should be dead. You cross back the threshold and thank your lucky stars. But also you remember how the rock went through you and take care to sit by it often as it curls up in the front wall like a wolf asleep. It is a head of creature earth, the eye of ancient storm, a waymaker.
Ooh.
So that's wolf, first poem with a wolf in, I think, and that's a sort of domestic setting, isn't it? But the next one is a setting in the wood. It's called Hood in the Wood, which I think, you know, we've heard from this fairy tale recently.
Okay.
There's a glint of red eyes in the wood, and twigs scramble to scratch. I pull my new hood down over my face. I'm glad of its warmth. It no longer matters if I'm blinkered. I've used my eyes to get unutterably lost. And running's no good. I can't even see the marks my breath makes on the chill of dark, or behind me, my footprints cancelling each other out in oozing mud. The strange man I met earlier seemed to belong in the wood. He would not fall or get lost with those merry eyes. How warm they were, like the wise old gold of Granny's ring. He went off suddenly and fast for that queer sort of lope he had. His shadow was soft as wood smoke and looked like the shadow of something else. It was then I noticed fresh pine cones. They crunched under my feet like the bones of voles or frogs. I shouldn't have left the path, not for a dare. At least I was right to give him the basket. It's a comfort to know poor grandma already has my herbs. Thank you.
Thank you,
Susan. and the last one, well, this is where the wolf takes over the mind and the body, I suppose, a bit. And more than a bit. And so this is called Wolf in the Bone. The building blocks of life are vertebra, an ornamented column holding everything creature together. These are the finest things to appear under my hands as I scan the levity of the continuum, beating a path like water's way through mountain. I say through, because being barefoot, my soles breathe in the vegetation. My toes dance in the spirit of raindrops. My arches know their way through to the caves. My heels, digging in here, simply belong. I get myself into wolf's way to be here, getting my head straight, holding it high to synchronize what the air spells in my nostrils. In the wolf's nose, nothing is lost. Her nature absorbs all of nature as it so happens around her. She's a whisker behind any whisper. She's a place in the cycle of life which is ancient, but current, yet future. A lone wolf comes forward out of the scree, casts me one long look, sees what I am about. This gives me power to read the wolf back. Be the wolf. The rest stems from here. My lives are as a snake's life, charmed and sinewy. So I lay low if need be. I scruffle along on my belly, tempting a game of chase, then drop myself into a hidey hole in Mother Mountain's dark embrace. Then, out and about again, I pick myself up and run full pelt with the force of Father River in spate. Each of these phases develops stealth for survival, strong muscles to hunt, and the howl to call the lupine in. As the spring bubbles into the sunlight like a wolf cub being born, as the stream slips down the mountain, unsettling and resettling the stones by the phases of the moon. As water is, wolf is, weaving a pact with the simplicity of moving along. Energy is too easy a word for what is created this way. Anima builds on letting go, parting to flow, rich with essences drawn, oh, all the way from the original fragmentation. The impulse for rapture to begin.
Oh, you've set me up for the wolfy night. Thank you.
January is the wolf month, you know. The wolf moon is in January. So that's when we really have to really get out there howling.
Is that true? This is true about January is the wolf month. Right.
Yeah, well, they came to the villages. We won't dwell on what they were doing in the villages in January when they were hungry, but they did come into the villages in January.
Should we dwell a little briefly? We just dwell very briefly on what they did in the villages in January.
Yes. Well, it was interesting that your theme that you set was potential theme was wolves and worrying, because unfortunately, as an ex-shepherd, I was listening to a bit on the radio about a guy, and he was in the centre of Europe somewhere, I can't remember where, but he was a shepherd with a large flock in the mountains, and he described the scene when, for the third time, the wolves had made havoc. With this theme, if a dog attacks a sheep, it's worrying them, and I think it's a bit more than worrying, isn't it?
Yes, there you go.
Yes, it was. But I'm, as far as I can gather, the European wolves of a more fierce nature than the American wolves. Whereas the wolves in my show are the Mexican wolves that are small and I believe there's never been a person attacked by a wolf in America, which is just extraordinary considering their reputation and the way they've been hounded.
That is extraordinary. I think they must just have good PR people.
Well, yes, obviously.
Okay.
Helen, would you like to do another poem?
Definitely, let's hear another one.
There are probably wolves in here, because there's wolves in everything I do. But I shall read, while we're on folklorish things, I shall read the first poem for the Anatomical Venus, which takes some of the lines from the Essex Witch Trials and the title from the Bible, from Exodus 7:11, which is, "Thou shalt not suffer a sorceress to live." But her neighbour's sickness was more than merely unnatural, for he sang perfectly without moving his lips. "For she is intemperate in her desires and pilfers apples from the orchard, for she hitches her skirts to clamber the fence. For her womb is a wandering beast, for she's husbandless and at candle time brazenly trades with the devil. For she spoke razors to her brother who has looked upon her witch's pap and the odious suckling imp. For the corn is foul teeth, for the horse is bedlam in its stable, for the black cow and the white cow are dead." Jolly.
Yeah. I think we are definitely set for the night now. Let's all go out.
That brings me back as well.
Let's dress up and go out with candles in Totnes and Dartington and where you are in Norwich.
I always do that.
Those lamps, those oil lamps are beautiful to walk with, aren't they? The old Tilly lamps. My son used to walk out with those and they're very fine to walk with.
Ladies and gentlemen, it has been amazing. You have been wonderful. Helen Ivory, Susan Taylor, Mr. Matt Harvey, thank you for being on the Barrel House podcast.
Thank you, Judy, and thank you, everybody. It's been a visceral, shivering pleasure.
Thank you
so much. That was really excellent. Thank you. Awesome.
All the best to all of you. Can you hear a sound? Ear to the ground.
The final of the lockdown podcast and Matt Harvey. Oh, Matt Harvey. He didn't want to go. Matt Harvey, Helen Ivory, Susan Taylor. Thank you so much. And to Billy Elliott, our series editor. Thank you. And to Wax Machine Music. So we have come to that part of the programme where we play a little bit of intro music and then introduce Rosie Jackson to you. So just bear with me while I get that music on. Rosie Jackson has taught at the University of East Anglia and many creative venues. She won First Prize Tynmouth in 2021. Third Prize Acumen 2021. First Prize Poetry Space 2019. First Prize Wells 2018. First Prize Stanley Spencer 2017. She collaborated with the late Graham Birchall on Two Girls and a Beehive, poems about the art and lives of Stanley Spencer and Hilda Carline Spencer, and that's Two Rivers Press, 2020, and with Dawn Gorman on Aloneness is a Many-Headed Bird, and that was Hedgehog Press, 2020, and Rosie's website is www.rosiejackson.org.uk. And the title of the book is Light Makes It Easy, and that's the Indigo Pamphlets by Indigo Dreams Publishing Limited. And the book itself is personal, fluent, and questioning. These poems from 2021 respond to the changed circumstances of the world. Persistent in their spiritual quest and courage, they embrace loss, mortality, transience, talk openly of death and what might lie beyond, go deep in search of beauty, meaning and love. They dream of the world, stopped in its foolish tracks. Old forms of power, surrendered to the power of trees. Private, and collective suffering redeemed by the different forms of awakening. So let's get Rosie on the line. Okay, so it's that time. We'll call Rosie Jackson. Let's get her on the phone. Oh, let's have a look. Hello, Rosie.
Hello, Julie.
Hi there, and welcome to 102.5 FM Sound Art Radio, The Word Cafe. Rosie Jackson, we are so delighted to have you on our final programme of the series. So that's number 7. To showcase your new book, Light Makes It Easy. And I have to say, I'm one of the lucky people. I actually have a copy of your poetry book in my hand.
Thanks, Julie. It's a delight to be here.
So I'm going to sort of suggest that I just leave you to thrill our audience with this book and the poems therein. So we like to sort of get you to imagine that you're at the Word Cafe proper, in situ at the Barrel House, with those fabulous red theatrical curtains as your backdrop, and the audience will be glued. And so over to you, Rosie Jackson. Thank you.
Thanks, Julie. Well, I thought I'd start with a poem that's not in this collection, but it's on display this week in Totnes in the community bookshop. And I thought I'd read this because I've had a lot of good feedback about it. So this poem comes from my previous pamphlet called Aloneness is a Many-Headed Bird. What a wonderful title. And that title came from my collaborator, Dawn Gorman. And we did a poetry dialogue where we just wrote poems to each other, and it won the Hedgehog Press competition in 2020. And this is my final poem from that. And it's called Hashtag Better Than Angels. That murmuration of starlings I saw at New Year on the Somerset levels. 4 million of them, giant ink blots in the sky, melding into dark formations above water and peat. I posted photos on Facebook, hashtag better than angels. The universe, thank God, is more intelligent than we are. The soul in everything, animus mundi. If it takes another flood to bring us to our senses, it will happen. Everything is connected. Even as being in a body gets harder, we have to let ourselves be worn away, dissolve, till we are more river than rock, able to move with the current, tide, pull of the moon, to become as transparent as spirit, compassion sitting inside us like water. Vicky McRae, the woman from Tennessee who contracted AIDS from her bisexual husband, then nursed him till his death, nursed her sister too, contaminated by the same man. Vicky forgave them both. Love without hair splitting. Love that puts itself in the balance, light as a feather, yet muscled enough to carry the world. I'm very interested in kind of finding ways to survive this very difficult world we live in at the moment. And most of the poems in Light Makes It Easy were written during lockdown. And the first poem in the collection is called Lockdown is a Kind of Pilgrimage. And several people have written to me saying, oh, that's exactly how it was for me. So I thought I'd share this one. It is kind of makes it clear that I have a lot of spiritual priorities. That matters to me a lot, how we use our life and what it's for. Lockdown as a kind of pilgrimage. One day I will relive this as a time of elegy, of quiet reckoning. Try to recall the moat of silence that circles the house. How chairs and sofas have turned into islands, the floor an ocean. My sacred journeys in the world were noisier affairs, no peace at all. The manic pace of India, frantic rickshaw rides, poverty thrusting itself into my face along with traffic, frangipani. Now I'm watching through skylights as if this is my meditation, the way clouds slowly drift, collect, disperse, the way even the blue backdrop is an illusion. Somewhere, presumably, something is watching us with equal amazement, equal awe, as we drift, collect, disperse. How can a time of suffering feel so holy? Surely we're being asked to go inwards, go deeper, beyond shale and sandstone, below hidden blocks and habit patterns of our lives, to the deepest source. Why else are the usual sites of blessing closed? Lourdes, Mecca, Jerusalem's holy sepulchre, unless to remind us we must find love here in our cells of seclusion, or not find it anywhere. And I'm very interested in how other people cope with the challenges of life and find their spiritual path. And I became interested in various medieval mystics, especially women. And one of them, the famous Hildegard of Bingen, who was also a wonderful musician, had this wonderful notion of what she called greening, or to use the Latin word viriditas, which is a theological term which she used to convey the healing and creative power of nature. And she concocted various remedies and prescriptions for our healing, both physical and psychological, emotional. And this is one of her actual remedies that I've put into a poem. Hildegard's remedy. And when a man's mind is buried like coal under the earth, tie round his head a cloth in which sit cooked grains of wheat, and let the softened wheat carry to his disheartened mind memory of warm bread, the comfort of a kitchen where love holds the ladle, a field where poppies and mice exult in summer. Then clouds will pass. Darkness and delirium will be shot through like thunder riddled by light. And when the cloth is unwound, the man will smile for the first time in months, will pluck a blade of grass taller than his hands, put it to his lips, and make it sing. So I find a lot of nurture and succour from reading other poems, other poets. And my favourite poets really are mostly women poets: Jane Hirschfield, Marie Howe, Kim Moore, Katrina Naomi. But last night, Poetry Tynmouth had a wonderful event for Seamus Heaney, and we read some Heaney poems, which were fabulous. And another one of my favourite male poets is the American Jack Gilbert, who died a few years ago. And this is a poem inspired by his poetry. And at the end, it has a reference that poets will recognise. When we're doing our editing, we're often told to murder our darlings. In other words, to take out the bits we're fondest of that are usually overwritten. So this has that reference at the end. It's called How to Love the Dead. Now that the past has been eaten by moths, the future fallen like seeds in a forest fire, I seek refuge in the present, though it's unfamiliar, and I too am drifting between worlds, caught up with thousands of souls unmoored by their unexpected death. I too struggle to become other than I was. I too lost for words in this vast homecoming. When I turned to poets for help, Jack Gilbert, who knew all about beds and bodies, human love and its unmaking, offers me titles like How to Love the Dead, or cherishing what isn't. He encourages my use of unfashionable language. Heft, tenderly, meanwhile, marred, tells me the 9 years since his passing have stretched into the no time of legend. Less exile than living in a land you know you don't quite deserve, like his sojourn in Greece, that perpetual wonder of islands sleeping in the sea. Sand almost too hot to walk on with bare feet. And yes, he says, it's fine to improvise, to imitate his best lines, the ruthless furnace of this world, mortality like a cello inside him. He's beyond attachment to any of his darlings. I just love that line, mortality like a cello inside him.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think that's probably my favourite poem in this pamphlet. But other people have said this next poem is their favourite. This is about my son. Ironically, for someone who's so into spiritual life, my son is an atheist and pretty material with it too, and doesn't have any time really for trucking with the spiritual. So I wrote this poem. One autumn morning, say, my son is paid to cover dirt with layers of paint, the opposite of archaeology. He forbids me to talk about the love of my life, a man I never met, who set up an ashram in India. Yet I cherish a dream that when I'm gone, questions will start to surface. One autumn morning, say, around the side mirror of his decorator's white van, an impossibly intricate web will have spun itself. And my son will stare at the delicacy of threads coated with beads of dew that balance like dancers on an implausibly thin rope. It is then perhaps he will wonder what's become of me. And for just a few seconds, we'll pause before opening the door. And now that we're leaving restrictions behind us over COVID, wisely or unwisely, I thought I'd read this poem I wrote after our first lockdown ended and my partner and I had our first walk down on the coast in Dorset. We went down to Chesil Beach. This is called What Are We to Do with So Much Beauty? Our first day out of lockdown, we walked the ridge above Chesil Beach, mile after mile of beauty so intense our heads spin. The air so clear we could have shed our bodies, dizzy with the freedom of pure spirit as we fall upward. The pink thrifts have not heard of morning, nor the swifts and skylarks. My new man points out brimstones, orange tips, Adonis blues. Our boots, unleashed on shingle, creak in delight. Specks of white are hints of swans down on the fleet. After weeks indoors, we squint against the flare of light from the sea. Take care to circumnavigate strangers. We wave to fishermen distanced on the wild lace by the water's edge. Marvel how the sea knew how to carve from land this suave curve, the long, lazy stretch of it. And who taught them to root here? Alliums, horned poppy, iris. We don't shy away from statistics of the sick and the dying, how even now so many are spiralling away. But we offer it to them this day. Stockpile hill, haze, buzzard, stonechat, sun, all that is afire with pink, sage, gold, as if to hoard this light, this beauty, for whatever dark may come. And finally, I'm going to read the final poem, Light Makes It Easy, the title poem. This I wrote a couple of years ago when I was starting the process of moving house, which has been quite a saga. And soon I'll be moving again, so it's just as relevant now. And it's about the need to shed things, clear our clutter, both material and internal. And also it kind of images the process of moving as a sense of moving also to the afterlife. So it's both physical and metaphysical. Light makes it easy. You're moving at last. It's a place you saw once in a dream. Blue sky, white house, long slope of grass. It's how, if you could live on after your body, you might shape the afterlife. Pears are about to fall. Poems come flooding in. Stars tell you of the beauty, the necessity of transit. You don't care about anything you've lost. This is your home now. Chairs floating under the vines. Paths white with salt. You never thought you could pack up your old walls so easily. You've never been so ready to let go. The stones of your old life are on their knees. The kitchen table must be left behind. The king-sized bed is too large. But you no longer want space inside, only outside, where apples are falling, blackberries stud the hedgerow. Let no one throw cold water. You know now you are mortal. Your clutter is so much punctuation. How clear the light makes things. In the distance, you can see the needle's eye. How good to let your possessions go. How good to leave behind all power, but the power of trees. To lean towards your words, your silences, your sweet earthly body, your home that nests in this place between field and forest, like a foretaste of the afterlife. Like something you glimpsed once in a dream, a blossom of rain, petals falling. And I was very lucky that that poem won first prize in Poetry Tynmouth competition last year. I've just in fact judged their competition this year, at least the Devon element of it. So I've just waded through 284 poems, which was partly a delight, partly not. Perhaps I could just mention where, if anyone's interested, they could get my book.
Yes, so, please. Yeah.
You can always email me, rosie@rosiejackson.org.uk, and I can arrange to send something to you. But Light Makes It Easy is also available from Indigo Dreams Press, who are a press based in Devon. And while I've mentioned Poetry Tynmouth, I would like to just wave the flag for them. They're a wonderful organisation based in Tynmouth, yep. But reaching out to the whole of Devon and beyond. And they're having an event on the 28th of May, which will be a real live in-person event with the main judge of their competition, Katrina Naomi, who's from Cornwall, reading at that event. And I'll be reading live at that event too. And there will be the prize giving event. So that's the 28th of May in Tynmouth.
Definitely going to be there.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Honestly, I just feel so privileged, honestly, to have heard you read from this book, having received it a week or so ago. And as I mentioned via an email, I sort of read the first few poems. And it was such an emotional journey from the very beginning of your book. And I felt a kind of fizz with aliveness, but the colour and the words and everything, Rosie, I just think congratulations on this achievement. And I wanted to just mention Jerry Dudgeon, who is the painter and responsible for the front cover of your pamphlet. I just wanted to actually ask you why you chose that particular image, and had you worked with Jerry or painted with him, or what's the connection there?
No, I haven't actually, I'm planning to work with him at some stage when I'd love to do one of his workshops. But no, I did some work in Dorset down in Bridport some years ago. Mm-hmm. And I remember visiting various venues in Bridport that were displaying Jerry Dudgeon's artwork, and I was so struck by it. I thought, oh God, I'd love to own one of these. Ooh. And I'd love to do his workshops, and I'd love to have one on one of my book covers. So when the chance came and I'd finished this book, I thought, right, I'm going to trawl through Jerry's images, see if there's one that I feel would fit, and ask him if I might have permission to use it. So I did all those things.
That's absolutely brilliant.
I chose this one partly for it's got a lot of vibrant terracotta colours, which I love, pink and reds, and it's kind of semi-abstract. He does this, he's amazing at being able to do landscapes that are just recognizable as landscapes, but also they're semi-abstract.
They are, and
have beautiful, beautiful images and colors and compositions. And so I just felt very privileged that he let me use that very generously. Let me use that without any charge, which is unusual for artists.
Very unusual. Yes, it is. Yeah. I just think that is, you know, it really is so. It's so compliments the book because there's so much light and also colour and reference to colour in the book. So I urge you, listeners out there, to make connection with Rosie Jackson or indeed Indigo pamphlets, Indigo Dreams. And thank you so much, Rosie, for generously giving your time to Sound Art Radio and the Word Cafe. We really, really enjoyed listening to your poems today.
Thank you so much, Julie. I hope one day to be there in person. But
definitely.
Thank you so much. Much appreciated.
Okay. Thank you so much. Bye-bye, Rosie.
Bye.
Thank you to Rosie Jackson there. And let's just have a little bit of music before we take you on a biscuit tour. You know we love our biscuits.
Let's dance, put on your red shoes and dance the blues. Let's dance to the song that's playing on the radio. Let's sway while color lights up your face. Let's sway, sway through the crowd to an empty space. And if you say run, I'll run. Say hide, we'll hide, because my love for you would break my heart in two. If you should fall into my arms and tremble like flowers.
A bit of M Ward and Let's Dance. But it is time. We have got to get the Professor of Whimsy on. You know, Mr. Robert Garnham. Robert, are you there?
Hello there.
Oh, there you are.
This is Robert Garnham.
Ooh.
Professor of Whimsy. So I'm on my travels again. And I am in Brixham and I am at Furzham Green. I thought I'd come down here in the sunshine and just perform a poem or two. And wouldn't you know, it is absolutely chucking it down with rain. So I'm standing here in the middle of a field with a carrier bag, poetry book, and some audio equipment. So what have I got to... what's happened in the last 7 days? Well, not a lot, really. I'm staying at my mum's. She lives here in Brixham. And the muv was telling me that there's a new craft shop opened in town. I thought, oh, great. She said, yeah, they do wool, they do knitting patterns, they do sewing patterns and all kinds of embroidery threads. It's amazing, she said. She went in there, she had a really good time. I said, oh, that's wonderful. She said, yeah. And the funniest thing is, it's when I was there, it was being run by these two young men, she said. Lovely young men. They were obviously brothers because they were, you know, they were really close. One of them was even wearing nail varnish, she said. Of course, they must have been looking after it for their grandmother. She's probably popped out and they'd come in just to help her out. I said, yes, that's probably exactly what it is. So anyway, yes, here we are in Brixham. I'm just walking now across a very muddy field. My trousers are getting wet. I think I'm going to stop a minute. Just here, yeah, just here, that will do. And we'll do a poem. This one doesn't have a title yet, actually. It's just called Poem. Or at least that's what I call it. Poem. Only if you first play my violin, the lock keeper said, and make beautiful music, will I let you through. Jason had a stab at it, and the lock keeper howled like a wolf. You have a go, Jason said to Marie, who tried her best, only for the lock keeper to howl like a mating hippopotamus. Your turn, Marcy, Marie said. Marcy was at the back of the narrow boat, practicing her cello. She gave it a go, and the lock keeper whimpered like a kitty cat. And then his beard fell off into the canal. So anyway, there we go. That was just a little poem there for you. I think I'm going to go and find somewhere to go inside and have a coffee, because it is freezing, it's raining, and yes, I'm getting very muddy. So this is Robert Garland, Professor of Whimsy, signing off. Thank you for flying with me.
Thank you, Robert Garnham. So this is our final programme. Is everyone crying? I'll be back, don't worry, hopefully, in September, when, well, you'll be feeling like having more poems, won't you? Won't you? Brace yourself, it's nearly time for Dial a Poet. Do you know Kerry Baker? Well, you should. You're gonna know her.
For fear your grace should fall. Let's dance. For fear that life is all. Or let's sway. You could look into my eyes. Let's sway under the moonlight, the serious moonlight. And if you say run, I'll run with you. And if you say hi, we'll hide, because my love for you would break my heart in two. If you should fall into my arms and tremble like flowers,
Okay, so it's that time when we get our dial-a-poet on the blower. So let's call Kerry Baker. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, you are nice and loud and clear. Hello and welcome to 102.5 FM Sound Art Radio. Kerry Baker, poet. Oh my God. Where are you located, Kerry?
I am in Ashburton in Devon on the edge of Dartmoor.
Oh, I didn't know you lived so close. You're in Ashburton. I thought you were in Exeter. Oh, that's amazing. That's even more amazing. Amazing. Now, Kerry Baker, let's put you on the spot. I've seen you. I've seen you in action on the stage, and you are out there, babe. You are a fantastic slam poet. Tell the audience out there how to achieve sort of equilibrium. Do you get terrified in a slam, or are you actually quietly confident? How does it roll?
Completely terrified. Completely terrified.
So, but what are your top tips then?
I think I just got to a stage where I was kind of went, I'm just going to do it. I've just got to do it. Get your big girl pants on, really. Yeah.
I have to say, I've only done one slam in Bristol, and I was very lucky that I won it. I have no idea how. But then when I went back for the second time, and to compete with a lot of other people, I was absolutely a pyjama and awful. And even I knew when I was doing my poem, I was awful and I didn't get anywhere. But that's all right. Because I think you have to keep maybe going for it and keep thinking, well, part of the entering is the fun of the whole thing, isn't it? You don't actually have to win it to sort of think. And I suppose you're right about the nerves. Perhaps a bit of nervous energy, it gives it edge. Maybe that's a good thing.
I think so. I mean, it's a really different skill, and I'm kind of still really new to all of this anyway. And I've done two spork slams, and then I did the Ubi Hive one and got through to the final.
Ooh.
And I was up against Catherine O'Driscoll on both things in the sport.
And
she's like, she's UK champion and fifth in the world, so that's, I thought it was a bit unfair that I was pulled out against
that's absolutely amazing. What a kickoff though.
But I mean, it's just amazing. And I've actually, when you said, you know, think about people who've inspired you, and she really, I do find her super inspiring.
And
when I chatted to her a bit about what, you know, what she does, and she's nailed it, you know. She really analyzes everything that she does about previous slams and what she's doing, and you know, it's an art. There's an art to slamming.
Yeah, I can believe that. And an art, and maybe a bit of a science in terms of analyzing the judges and trying to get in their heads and maybe wondering what sort of poetry they write and what they like and all that. I'm sure that's all part of it. Now, moving away from slam and getting back to you. So let's actually, let's get going with a poem. I think everyone out there is gagging at the bit and needs Kerry Baker's poetry. So let's have a poem.
Okay. So at the moment, just a little bit of background before I start is that I've just taken the big bold step of taking on a mentor. Rebecca Tantoni is going to be my mentor, and I'm super excited because I've been kind of shaping a collection, and she's going to help me kind of like grow that a bit more. And so I've picked three pieces from this potential collection, none of which are sweary, obviously, for the radio, which was a bit of a challenge.
You're like me. Yes.
So they kind of follow this thing that happens in people's lives where you kind of go, bah, you know, it all sort of falls apart, or stuff happens, human stuff happens, and then we break out, and then we begin this unraveling and awakening, and you know, at this time. So the first piece that I'm going to read is called Inside.
Great.
Inside every woman, there is a fire at some stage of smolder to rage. Inside every fire, there is ash mourning, carrying grief into the breeze. Inside every ash there are greys to stain the marks of her existence. Inside every grey there is stillness and surrender, with memories of suns reflecting. Inside every stillness there is fire, waiting in peace, preserving its energy. Inside every fire there is a woman, focusing her dreams, preparing to rise.
Ooh. And you are focusing your dreams, clearly, to get Rebecca. To get Rebecca as your mentor. That's pretty fabulous, isn't it? So that's really strong. And you have such a good performance technique and reading technique as well. I felt that you kind of meted that very strongly. And I think that's all part of it, isn't it? Have you felt that? What was your background before then? So how long have you been around the spoken word?
When I did my leaving school going, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
When I was 18, I kind of went, I can't get into university. I don't want to do this. I always wanted to be an actor. So I did the cheeky thing of writing to loads of theatre companies and asking if I could get work experience. And I actually was really fortunate in that I managed to get work with a theatre company at the age of 18. That's and then good. Because I had that job, I then managed to work for touring theatre companies for 5 years.
Wow.
As a performer, and then I studied theatre at Dartington College of Arts. So my background is performance. And then I had this period of my life where I had 3 children, which was amazing and still is. But I also then trained in, I assess for dyslexia and I'm a dyslexia specialist and I work with children with ADHD as well.
Gosh, so that
bit of my life is really important. I'm really, really passionate about that work that I do with special educational needs. So I am a performer as well. So I guess teaching is all performance as well. So
yeah, that sounds like you've obviously had a very strong background in drama, which is clearly why, I'm so impressed with your performance skills, not just in real life, but on the radio as well, to kind of analyse that. Actually, I was going to ask you, because you mentioned earlier about your work with children and dyslexia, and I wondered if you used poetry with the children.
Absolutely. And the techniques that I use as well are with dyslexic learners. It's about kind of segmenting and doing things in stages, and so haiku is great, and doing lots of, I call it brain dumping, where you pick a word and then you just get it all out, and then encourage them to look around the room for ideas. It's always about multi-sensory learning. And poetry is so perfect because not necessarily adhering to form so much as just expanding the mind and then bringing all the kind of disparate connections that dyslexic learners are so good at, because they're whole perceptual thinkers. They can really make connections where other people can't always make connections. So creativity and poetry is, it's amazing.
I love that, Kerry. Thanks for sharing that. Let's have another poem.
Okay. All right. So this one is called Enough. This is slightly longer. Enough. Don't tell me I've had enough. I know if I need it because life just tastes better. Don't tell me I've had enough. I know when I've had too much because I'm thirsty, needing water, hydrating my way back to balance. Don't reduce my children's intake to keep them safe from learning to listen to the waves within them. Don't gaslight us from trusting our deep earth connection in knowing when I am enough. The school cook keeps a secret supply and my kids know about it. In Mandy's cupboard, you can ask for it. A Devonshire drug baron of sodium, secret white stash of banned pristine minerals. She knows because she's been here longer. Life is crystallized and carried by water. It runs in vitro veins beneath every surface, gushing storylines of tears, suspended animation, sweat licked and kissed from your lips. Sperm explodes in vital redecoration. Life is addictive. Of course I want more than just enough. I play I spy for the good stuff. Himalayan pink rock and mold and flakes. Surreptitiously searching in friends' kitchens. And if I can't see it, I ask for it. Or I bring my own, a portable paradise, to quote Robinson, Roger, not Crusoe. But perhaps living like dreamers, we all know flavor carried by waves wave through us. Tropical islands connect and divide us, lapped by salty kisses. Taste for freedom lingers, still never enough. My mother's grandfather died when she was five. He cherished her and she him. She wasn't allowed to say goodbye. Too young to understand or attend funerals, not enough. He called her his salt. Because you bring flavor to everything. She says she didn't have him long enough, but maybe they had just enough of the best of love to flavor forward, carry and carry on. Just enough. Pass the salt, please. And don't tell me I've had enough. I'm sprinkling dreams of freedom, loving grandfathers, uplifting strong daughters, singing wild songs of crystalline connection, kissing sweat and tears under starlit seams, releasing warm explosions in teenage dreams, all the flavors of the good stuff, not reducing my intake, but loving my lifeline, salt lines. And whilst I'm still here breathing, I have never had enough. Thank you.
Wow, what a selection of poems you've chosen. Now, I know you, you crazy poet, you managed to do a poem on the very last minute. And I thought that this is what I love about working with different poets, and they're the ones that play it safe, and then the ones that are dangerous. And guess which one are you fit into, which category?
Well, I'm trying to be a bit more risky and dangerous, I think, sort of, you know.
Yeah, you're and the dangerous
one. Yeah, because I think I'm trying to get out there a bit, out of my comfort zone.
You're definitely out your comfort zone, babe. I even put drums on for you for that.
Drum beat, I love it. I love the drum beat.
So, are you going to do that as your final farewell to our lovely listeners? Do that.
Okay, so the word pang, and it's called pang. Deep inside us all, there lives the pang. It is a sharp-toothed, shadowy fang. It seeks our cracks, gives us heart and gut-wrench jangle to remind us all we're 100% human, not angel. It might jumble up your insides in a longing, lacking wrangle, seeing someone else's love, job, house, or new fangle. Lost, forgotten dreams crushed through life's mangle. Missing absent friends we'd love to entangle. We revisit old conversations entrenched in their embrangle. Or perhaps you hold a secret fantasy for a threesome twisty triangle. Bodies testing geometrical connections fused at different angles, getting all a bit animal and massive like the jungle. Limbs longing, gravity succumbing, ending in a tangle. The womb drum clang bang that sprang as you woke from dreams of sexual melang. Left a longing, a taste for something, a pen ting panging for a fantasy gang bangle.
Yeah. This is what Kerry Baker does to the stage. the stage just unanimously explodes into drum beats. Thank you so much for being part of Sound Art 102.5 FM and the last final Word Cafe of the season. Really delighted to have you on board. So thank you so much for all your poetry, your words, and actually inspiration. You know, it really does inspire people listening to the program to actually get their pen out and try and write. You know, everyone has got something inside of them to express, I'm sure.
100%. Do the brain dump thing. It's so liberating. Just get it out. Just get all your words out.
I love that.
Thank you, Julia. I really appreciate this. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Now, I'm just going to do the thing of saying ta-ra.
Ta-ra.
That was Kerry Baker. Thank you so... Oh, I've got a croak. Thank you so much, Kerry Baker. You see what you've done to me? You've closed my throat up. I've had a tremendous time at Sound Art Radio. Really have. These last 7 weeks, 7 lockdown pods with 14 tremendous poets from across UK. Thank you all. And obviously, particularly to Matt Harvey for being gorgeous and co-presenting that. To obviously our Trace and Sarah. Thank you for bobbing on the programme periodically each week. But particularly for today, getting you to do a poem, Tracy, was just sublime. And Sarah reading your peachy recipe. Thank you both. Then, I have to say thank you to Billy Elliott, who was the series editor and who provided the music by Wax Machine. Big thanks to Martin Seeger for his Fantasimondo piece of music at the beginning of this programme. Thank you for that. It puts us in the poetry mode, doesn't it? And thank you to Mr. Robert Garnham, who's also been part of this pod resurgence. Thank you, Professor of Whimsy, and those biscuits were delicious today. And then finally, my thanks to poet Rosie Jackson. And in my hot little hand, right here in my pretend studio, which is actually the sitting room, which is all green with loads of my paintings and rubble everywhere. It started off, you know, a couple of weeks ago, 7, really tidy. I'm not going to say it was dust-free. It wasn't dust-free, but it was definitely tidy. And now it's like total chaos. So go out and get your book, Light Makes It Easy by Rosie Jackson. And to all the people on Book Launch and Too Many Poets to Mention and Dial a Poet, thank you for being part of this. So it's me, Julie Mullen, saying ta-ra. Kerry Baker, top. Okay, see you in real life, I hope, at a word cafe. Bye-bye.
If you should fall into my arms and tremble like a flower, if you should fall into my arms and tremble like a flower, if you should fall into my arms and tremble like a flower.